Hello and welcome. This is Art Speak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd with you today, every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. on KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in or listening to us online. So, we'll get started here. As always, because Kansas City is such a full-figured creative community, we have some beautiful people here in the studio live today. We actually have poet, writer, performer, singer, Huascar Medina. We also have Annie Vulcan, Michelle Dreher, Angie Dreher, Neil Goss, all in the studio today. So let's get started. We're going to start off with Huascar Medina. And let me tell you, he has lived artfully in Topeka, Kansas since 2001. Now, his hometown was San Antonio, Texas, but he does not miss things that do not fit in his ticket pocket. Huascar's work encompasses deep imagery and metaphor. His time is well spent performing theater, singing, and writing. He is a member of Topeka's Speakeasy Poetry Group and the Red Tail Collective in Lawrence. His first published poem appeared in Homewards, a project of former Kansas poet laureate Wyatt Townley. Huascar's words can be found in Reverberated Echoes, a Kansas City Reader and Prompts, a spontaneous anthology by the poets of Poetic Underground, and How to Hang the Moon. His first published collection of work was published by Spartan Press in February of this year and is part of the Pop Poetry series. So I want to welcome my friend Huascar Medina.
Thank you.
Wow, it's been a while since I've seen you, a couple of months. And actually, you did a project that with Barclay Advertising Agency here in town with some other poets, and that was a lot of fun. It was just prompts and all that.
Yeah, I really enjoy extemporaneous work like that. Put you on the spot and just see what you can create in that moment.
Yeah. You know, it really makes you think fast. But, you know, you have such a presence in the community here in Kansas City and Topeka, and it's a thriving writing poetry community. You talk about your work that encompasses, I never can say words, I can't get my mouth to work today, imagery and metaphor. Let's talk about some of your work that you've written, and certainly you'll share some with us today, right?
Yes, if you don't mind, I can do that at
absolutely.
Any time. Just let me know.
Yeah.
I really focus on image. I think I just want to find an essence in a thing, give it a purpose again, make it an object, and try to create an emotion within that particular object. And it's usually moments are what I'm trying to pass through, but I'm trying to pass through those moments through objects, through, let's say, a flower in a pot on a table during dinner, just random things that people overlook sometimes within a moment, things that could hold the emotion in a room very easily. I think I challenge myself by trying to give an inanimate object, you know, something that's real and innate, some spirit.
Sort of alive.
Yes.
Of that. Are there certain themes or objects that you gravitate towards?
Lately, it's been celestial, moon, stars.
Yeah.
You know, we've had some, I mean, we're having a solar eclipse next month.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking forward to that, see what kind of work comes out of that. We had the red moon. We had the really large moon in January. I've been paying attention to the sky a lot. I think dreamers tend to do that. So,
I would agree. You know, with your interest in the heavens and all that, was there always an interest in that in you, or just maybe?
It's been recent. It's trying to explore, and typically when we think of explorers, we think of people going out of our regular space, you know, out of our atmosphere, and I enjoy that. I think it gives the work a certain level of reverence when it's something that you can't, you know, touch.
And it also sort of gives you, sort of liberates your thinking, too, because you can kind of create that world, that space, that moment.
That's correct. Yeah. At the end of the day, even science becomes theory, so it remains abstract. So it's infinite, the possibilities with that image.
I love that. share some of your work, if you would, with us.
Yes, I don't mind at all. Give me a second here.
Yeah, you know, I think the solar eclipse is going to really affect a lot of people. And I'll just say something that my mother shared with me, that we were talking about the solar eclipse, that back when many of my relatives were pregnant during the last solar eclipse, my grandmother had all the pregnant women put a chain of safety pins across their bellies to protect that unborn child. So there's a lot of sort of myths and and superstitions aligned with the solar eclipse.
The first poem I'm going to read is it's a jazz-inspired poem. Okay. It's a with Marcellus. It's a song called "The Seductress." It's my favorite by him. It's here we go. "The Seductress." When I hear him, I let go of false notions of class, classics, and classical. I dissipate. I'm a songstress with ink for voice. I break the bars, measures, and refrains lived in. I feel the sounds of notes bent on the end like secret maps to harmony. Emotions echo this hard, our songs in rhythm with amplified hearts tied to downbeats. I want a soul of jazz to fly with the music. I need to breathe in heaven and exhale hell so I can feel the white and black of that sheet with the hands of monk and delve into the space between. Find those notes that we would have missed if we only cared for class, classics, and classical. I want to be that jazz. I need to feel his hand on the tip of that horn, grasping it as if his life depended on it, muting just enough to keep Gabriel at bay, as if another note played would be too much. That if he played again, he would lose his love for it and be less trumpet, nothing more than tinkling brass.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Does music play a role in your work, in inspiration, or in your writing?
I believe so. Rhythm is part of music, is also part of poetry. I mean, there's meter in both, and there can be rhyme in both as well. I listen to a lot of jazz because it's organic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can, within a set measure, I mean, you can change. When I look at a measure, I think of a stanza in a poem, you know, and I think of an instrument being played by a musician. It's no different than a poet with a pen or you know, a pencil.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Huascar Medina, who is a writer-performer. He also sings. You know, we're talking about his work, the writing process, and, you know, when you're talking about music, I have to ask you, are you a musician yourself? Have you studied music?
I have not studied music. My dad was a classically trained guitar player, so he taught me what he could when he was around. I play guitar. Other instruments, I can't say I play. I know real musicians, and they'll be real quick to say, no, no, you don't.
So. That's terrific. So, you know, your first publication of work was published this year through Spartan Press, and that was part of the Pop Poetry series in February. And, you know, I know you do a lot in between Kansas City and in Topeka. Do you have something coming up that you can share with our listeners where they might want to see you perform?
We're in Lawrence at the Eldridge Hotel, September 10th. So, Word Save Lives. It's we're trying to raise awareness for suicide prevention. It's something that's been going on yearly, and there's a lot of poets who are going to be involved with the process there. Dennis Etzel Jr., Annette Billings, Rhonda Miller, Kevin Ravis, the Polaroid of Kansas is going to be there. So, it's a long lineup of talented wordsmiths.
Yeah, and when is the date on that?
That is September 10th. It'll be at 6 o'clock.
In Lawrence, Kansas.
Yes.
And Eldridge Hotel.
Hotel, and the Big Six Room.
Yeah. You know, between, I should say, even broaden this more, between Lawrence and Topeka and Kansas City, there is a good, a strong community of writers and poets, right?
Correct. We're connected. There's a Open Mic Poetry Network on Facebook where people go to find each other, events, open mics, meetings, signings.
Now, I mentioned at the top of the introduction that your hometown is in San Antonio, Texas. Do you ever find time to revisit San Antonio and maybe share your work, your written words? And
I've been asked to recently. It's to a point where I need to get my words out in person more. I prefer to page, you know, regardless of the amount of time I spend performing. I do like being in the background and just letting the words speak for themselves, because sometimes tonation can really mm-hmm. change what someone is expecting within a piece.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to share another
work with us? All.
Yeah, yeah.
I have.
While you're here, yes, absolutely. And I will say Oscar Medina is on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook,
he's
on Facebook, too. Yeah, find him.
The next poem I'm going to read is one I'm working on for the next book, Un Mango Grows in Kansas. This poem is called She's Not Your Calla Lily. I think her bones would blush if I dug them out of a grave with a thimble taken from the sewing room in the basement of a nunnery filled with Mother Teresa posters. Her Spiritu Santa marveling at my persistence to unbury her, my desire to cleanse and wipe away sacrilege. As I searched, I would recite Rilke in an infinite cycle of Marian poems. She would find my toil in the earth picturesque, romantic, or disturbing, like another Alexandre Hogue, unfertile, barren, and scarred, a view of dreams abandoned. But the truth is, she is not buried here. The fire took her, the sons of El Sol. And this has always been bothersome. I'm troubled she has become knick-knackery, painted pottery in Diego's home. Outside La Casa Azul, a tourist mocks me for digging. Loco, just go inside and see her. But I want to touch her, hermano. If her body could not withstand her passions, what makes you think an urn could contain her ashes? She is out here, in the yard, waiting to be resurrected, a seed of cacao. He stood there for a moment in shame, not wanting to get his hands dirty, then walked away as I continued to scrape the earth with the persistence of an ox. I could tell the stranger had little to no respect for obsession, eternal love, or superfluous suffering. You can only martyr for what you believe in. He did not believe in love. He did not believe in her. His heart, a charlatan, gitana with desire. As he left, I yelled to him, I know who you are, Medid. Shame on you, Capcid. Shame on you, Diego. Shame on you. Shortly after, I was escorted from the lawn with the rock doves cuckooing. Their laughter too late to warn me, or maybe more mockery. It seems nature can be cruel to us all.
Wow, another beautiful poem.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Inspired?
Excuse me?
What was your inspiration?
Oh, I'm really focusing on, I read a lot of biographies about artists and relationships between artists, and I'm just doing a whole series of Latin artists and trying to put them in poems and try to give people a different perspective of their life that's not normally seen.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Frida and Diego's home in Coyoacan?
Have not.
Oh, no. Man. Because, you know, listening to you, it took me to that place with the Casa Azul. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite places to go in Mexico where you can actually walk through their home, and I just hear the voices of the people that pass through their doors, and it's just, I don't know, it's just really magical, I think. But we should go. We should go there.
Yes, we should.
Well, you know, I want to say that Oscar Medina has the first published collection of work, Spartan Press. It was published in February, and How to Hang the Moon?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, if people are interested in finding out more about your work or possibly purchasing this book, is it still available?
Yes. Go to Prospero's Books, 39th and Vine. You can find it there.
Yeah. Do you have another collection in the works? Or
yes,
still
I do.
Sort of,
yeah, I'm always working on projects. Yeah. The writing is constant from screenplays. I'm also a playwright. Help writing songs for a musical right now. I mean, I'm really invested in the writing process right now. But the next book will be Un Mango Grows in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So when did you first begin to write? I mean, has it always just been something that you knew that you could do and wanted to do?
It's an easier conversation to have when you're introverted to sit and write. You know, and then you can visit the work later.
Yeah.
And it's like a milestone of a moment. I mean, it exists. The earlier writing was really cathartic. It's more of a I pursued it as a diarist in a sense, just trying to make sense of my life at that time or the past, moving into that present moment. But I think I've come a lot further than that now. I think I'm writing about things outside of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking inward as much, more outward.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think that shows a lot of growth and healing, because that's what the writing has been for me, a healing process.
You know, and for a lot of people, a lot of artists that have sat in the seat where you're at, a lot of people have told me that art heals, and whether it's, you know, writing or something constructed or painting or that, you know, there's that, sort of that healing that happens, that takes place with art.
Yeah, they say, you know, that creativity is, you know, the greatest rebellion to our existence. It's mm-hmm. an opportunity mm-hmm. for you to define what you see, or to change, to rearrange it, to frame it in another way, give it another color, another yeah. sound, another voice. I like to do that. It's not because I don't enjoy, you know, the life that I live. It's mm-hmm. just I think I can make it more beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Would you like to share one more with us? Look at me putting him on the spot. He's like, oh, Maria.
I don't mind.
Yeah. So, Oscar Medina lives in Topeka, Kansas. But we're grateful that you took some time out of your busy schedule, because I know how busy you are. We tried to do this before. So I'm just really grateful.
For that.
No. No, there's no apology necessary. You know, it's a little tricky trying to get away during the work day when, you know, there's work to be done.
This is a poem that was published in Finding Zen in Cowtown, 30 Poems About Kansas City, edited by Jason Ryberg and Janet Powers. Surrogate City. Mama, estoy bien. Mother Casey has adopted me. She too wears iron garments of concrete and glass, winks at me to cross the streets, reminds me I am cared for through sirens in the air. She hums a highway lullaby of old Paseo Puente, so I may pass the nights. Skylines don't resemble mi vieja san ciudad in peace. She embraces your son, the sun, el sol, my soul. Casey has been good to me.
Wow. You know what? I'm so happy that you're here today, and promise me that you'll be back.
Yes, definitely. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Terrific. You know, we love having your words over the airwaves. Thank you so much, Oscar Medina. All right. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio right after this. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. Hello. Welcome. Happy Wednesday, everybody. And, thank you so much for tuning in online or on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio, kkfi.org online. So next up, we have Neil Goss, who is an artist living in Eudora, Kansas, where he focuses his art on earth processes while responding to human impacts upon those processes. In 2012, he received two BFAs in design, textiles, and ceramics from the University of Kansas. He's been dedicated to researching sustainable arts processes such as natural dyeing, weaving, utilizing hand-dug clay, and foraging art materials. Goss has taught workshops, installed public art, and presented art talks, artist talks from coast to coast and the United States. He currently is a practicing professional artist, artist in residence at the Charlotte Street Foundation, and teaches at the Lawrence Art Center. Welcome, my friend Neil.
Thank you so much, Maria. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy to meet you. Your work is just incredibly beautiful, and it's very earth friendly. Let's talk about sort of the inspiration, the guiding force that helped you decide, you know, to be more earth friendly with your work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of came around about without trying to go there. But in school at KU, we were taught to use Procyon dye as a fiber reactive dye.
Yeah. I mean, those are toxic.
Yeah, and I just, I don't know, I wasn't happy with the color palette that I was coming up with. It was too Crayola, is what I say.
Uh-huh.
And so in a weave structures class that I was taking, we had to research a specific branch of weaving, and I looked at backstrap weaving,
mm-hmm.
and all the people and cultures who I was researching, yeah. they were all using natural fibers that were outside with either plants or a few insects. And so that kind of really turned me on to that. And the first bath that I did was just using onion skins mm-hmm. and then having just that wool in the fiber or in the pot, and just the yellow that came out of there just blew my mind. And then the second bath was avocado skins with urine. Urine's a very incredible mordant, mm-hmm. Been used for centuries, and the red that came about, just, I don't know. I knew I was doing something right, you know?
And you were sold.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially. Yeah. People were very patient with me on the fifth floor back in school. Yeah.
Well, and I know that, again, talking about the fiber active dyes and all that, there is some toxicity to that, but even more... you know, some dyes are really, really harmful to the environment and large vats.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a lot of it, you know, is just size and scale and how much production's going on. But, you know, I mean, in that same regard, natural dyeing can have adverse effects on the environment mm-hmm. through different uses of mordants or mm-hmm. different things like that. So you definitely kind of got to be aware of that. You know, there's a lot of dyes that get shipped in because they're not grown locally or mm-hmm. they don't live here in regards to, like, the cochineal insect and things, but so yeah, you've got to keep your eye out, or you know, you could contradict that whole concept and idealism of having a low environmental impact with the art production.
And you did mention the cochineal worm, so do you actually import that
At this point, I don't use cochineal a lot in my own mm-hmm. work, but mm-hmm. when I'm teaching workshops, it's one of those that you don't have to, but you kind of have to introduce, because it's just one of those historical dye stuffs yeah. that it's one of the reds that's known to the natural world. But no, due to just like the warming of the planet and everything, like they're migrating north. Mm-hmm. They've been discovered mm-hmm. on our prickly pear in western Kansas. My botany professor, Kelly Kencher, was out harvesting medicinal plants for research. Back when I was a student, and you know, we've had prickly pear for years or decades, whatever, in our region, but he actually found the cochineal bug. So I say in like 5 to 10 years it could be a localized dye stuff to where mm-hmm. it could either be farmed or foraged mm-hmm. and we wouldn't have to have it shipped in. So to me, that's like depressing but also really exciting, you know.
In
due time. Yeah.
Well, as part of your art statement on your website, mm-hmm. which is neilgoss.com, mm-hmm. You mentioned that you've spent the past 6 years researching and working with fiber, natural dyes, and hand-dug clay and other forged art materials. And you know, there's something that you're finding outside in nature that you weren't able to get by purchasing canvas and brushes and paint from the store. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and that's, you know, when I did that independent project on natural dyeing and backstrap weaving, I did 2 classes, 1 session there. It really opened my eyes up to the natural environment that was mm-hmm. around me, and it was one of the first mm-hmm. times that I actually, you know, got off my bike from the road and went out and started foraging plants, like understanding certain plants that I was looking at, that it wasn't just a flower. It wasn't just a field mm-hmm. of green, you know. There were mm-hmm. all these dye stuffs, food stuffs, medicines, all these different things. And so it just, you know, it started to feel right. I was getting all the ticks and chigger bites that I could handle.
Do
you
ticks
know.
Make a good dye once they're all fully loaded?
No, but avoid the seed tick nests. I don't know. I've got some treacherous stories, but we won't get into that. But yeah, it all kind of started from that. And just, you know, a lot of my peers in school, they were making artwork mm-hmm. to get their grade. Yeah. And then that piece went in the trash. And I just, you know, I started thinking about that. And I was like, if that's really going to be the end result of my art, whether someone cares for it, houses it, whatever, like if in the end it's just going to, you know, go back, ideally I want it to be able to go back quickly, mm-hmm. more quickly than possible. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, like ephemerality has been a really large topic in my work. That being said, it can be preserved if a human being desires that. Mm-hmm. But my intention is to make it knowing that after my life, potentially before my life, it's going to go back with little problems, just being used from or made from borrowed earth materials.
Now, as an artist, have you always felt that sort of mentality, you know, you create, it exists, and then it goes away? Or is it just mainly working with the more natural fibers and dyes that you kind of work?
It transcends the materials and the processes. Like, it's, I don't know, I started doing it X amount of years ago. My wife and I came up with this concept, medicinal art, to where we're focusing on the medicinal aspects of the natural dyes mm-hmm. and installing them like it's a long, I won't get into all of it, but but yeah, so it kind of like started with that, but then I made a connection about a year and a half ago as I was doing a artist talk through Artist Inc. here in Kansas City, that like I have this connection to ephemerality and seeing my pieces being birthed, living their lives and then dying. Mm-hmm. Like I had this connection to like losing my father when I was 15. So having this connection of just like seeing it impact people in a certain regard, to whether they're a part of creating the piece, whether they're backstrap weaving it on site with me, or to whether they're experiencing like seeing that piece when it's first day, when it's installed, and then seeing it's like break down until it's death. But I just like I made that connection, and mm-hmm. it just kind of mm-hmm. seemed right, just subconsciously, that I think I was working for that for so long.
And if you've just tuned in to Art Speak Radio, I'm talking to artist Neil Goss from Eudora, Kansas, where he focuses his art on earth processes while responding to human impacts upon those processes. Your website, neilgoss.com, I was able to see photographs of actual people in the community using the back strap mm-hmm. in community projects, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that's something that I do a lot of, and I've been able to travel around the U.S. and do that an mm-hmm. awful lot. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, like a lot of 90% of the people who come in, like experience a backstrap loom when I'm there weaving, they've never seen it before. They haven't right. heard of it. Right. You know, there's definitely people who have, and the ones who have, they have some sort of like family cultural connection to it, and it's really special to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like it's for me, it's just to be able to have people have the chance to partake in creating art, because a lot of people don't really get that much time or chance or ability to, due to whatever reasons. But just to experience the backstrap loom, because it is, you know, one of the first looms of sorts that were used to weave cloth upon in human mm-hmm. history, and just to give people a chance to kind of touch that and, you know, get grounded to the earth for at least 2 minutes of their lives, because, you know, we're always tied to a tree sitting yeah. in the grass, so there's just that kind of connection to the earth that happens when you're backstrap weaving.
So some of the natural materials you use are hemp and wool, fallen tree limbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Hemp's my number one fiber that I use. Wool and alpaca and silk are some of the others. Mm-hmm. I don't like cotton. I'll use it if I get it from uh-huh. a thrift shop or something. Uh-huh. But yeah, no, those are my materials, and then I'll forge a lot of things on site. Most of like the tree limbs and things, I'll get those in whatever region it is that I'm either installing the work or making the work. But yeah, it's just kind of about borrowing materials from the earth, making art with mm-hmm. those materials, giving them a second life and a second purpose, and then just kind of letting the natural cycle do its thing.
And you do actual on-site installations. How do you plan for something like that?
It's like hard to plan for, you know, in regards to like because you can't force interaction.
Right,
like
right.
You can't force people to sit down at the loom and weave, and not everyone wants to, and that's totally fine as well.
Yeah, me.
So yeah, it's like, you know, you just kind of got to let that happen. Uh-huh. But the intent is to have them experience that weaving, and the community aspect of we're all coming together and doing just a small little bit. Everyone's going to throw mm-hmm. one small pick and maybe weave maybe an inch, but when everyone comes together and does that, you can create this massive monumental piece. And so we were doing that in Salina, Kansas mm-hmm. with their 7th graders, working with it was about 250 7th graders in the course of 2 days, and they all like sat down and wove about an inch. And I was trying to convey to them through this whole project that they matter. You know, it's easy to feel yeah. like we don't matter, we're really small in this world, but I just, you know, just to have that visual of all they did was throw a couple picks, made a couple inches, but then together all those students made a 40-foot tall totem of mm-hmm. what I call the woven totems.
And that was really beautiful, like, by the way. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, yeah. They were super proud of it, and that piece is still there. It's still breaking down. It's probably uh-huh. like 25-20 feet now, you know. Uh-huh. But yeah, I mean, it was special to see them like all just come together for one common goal, knowing that they're not going to do a whole lot, but yeah. in the end there's going to be this huge product.
But I love that each person's sort of has a connection to that work, you know. they have some investment in that work.
Yeah, and they, like, in that regard, claim ownership over it, you know, because, like, they help produce it. And so then, therefore, because it is, it's super ephemeral in nature. Like, you can light my weavings on fire, which that happened in Iowa's Davis Park with an installation that I did. You know, they're very ephemeral in that regard. They're easy to destruct or different things like that. But when multiple people in the community were a part of making it, there's, like, more people kind of taking care of it or keeping an eye on it and, and, you know, keeping vandalism from happening to it and things like that. But it's still, like, even when those things, like, vandalism do happen to them, it's just, you know, it's a part of the process. It's, like, again, a reflection of humans interacting with nature and different things like that.
You know, that's very different from sort of what we're taught. You know, don't touch, don't, you know, go near, just stand back and, you know, and that. I want to talk about the work that you did on stage for Peter and the Wolf. I found that really beautiful set designs that you worked on. And usually when we think about set designs, we think about something a little bit more technical, you know, canvas and chicken wire and all of that. But let's talk about your set designs
absolutely.
For that.
Yeah, so, I mean, in that regard, like, you know, don't get me wrong, I buy a ton of stuff for my art. You know, like, I buy my yarns and different things like that. I forage and grow most of my dyes. But yeah, it was a lot about just borrowing those earth materials, a lot of just, like, my concept with creating. But so, yeah, like, all that stage production was all made from natural materials all 3 years. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the 3 years, this year, 17, I was able to finally produce a full birch forest. Like, whenever you, it's a Russian story, so when you look into a Russian forest, usually a birch forest is the first Google image that pops up. So ever since that first year, I was like, I really want to do this. And then I wove two of them, and I was like, nope, not going to happen in 1 year's time. So yeah, slowly we were able to get that built up, but yeah, that's I've really enjoyed doing that project. Just utilizing tree limbs, hand dug clay. Last year, other than some fibers, the only thing that I bought was some straw bales to make the home with, and then those were given to a local farm in Lawrence after the production. But no, that's been a real pleasure doing Peter and the Wolf, and just having human bodies be up there and interact with that and just create the installation, treating it like a playground. But the most exciting part of that is the fact that there's a funder in Lawrence who gets all the second graders in Douglas County to come to the Peter and the Wolf performance, and there's four performances in one day. And it's just, it's magic to see the kids' faces, like, light up and interact with the wolf and Peter and how everything's going on, because, you know, they just, they respond so much more than adults do in certain settings like that. But except for the 8 a.m. performance. But those kids were not awake. Yeah.
You know, and I want to talk quickly about your upcoming work.
I have a show, Hempen Reforestation, coming up for First Fridays on August 4th at Volpace Bastille. And basically that show is going to be a series of installations, creating one immersive installation, just looking at America's fuel extraction and consumption, energy sources. And so I'll be just doing these certain installations, looking at fracking, coal, oil, also looking at solar and wind energy, but then also referencing hemp's untapped abilities to supplement some of these fuel sources and or potentially replace them. Because I do, like I say, hemp's my favorite material to use. And so this show is going to be a lot about that, but there's also going to be that human element connected in regards to, like, these different cultures or peoples that have been disrupted by, you know, extracting coal or natural gas or different things like that.
And Neil, what is the location of that?
Volpace Bastille, it's at about 18th and Locust, catty corner from Grinders, right there in the crossroads.
And that's going to be First Friday.
First Friday, August 4th, 6 to 10 p.m., opening reception. And, yeah. Should be fun.
It really is. Please share with us your website again and any other sort of social media contact that people
Absolutely,
may be
yeah.
interested in.
You can find out more about what I do at neilgoss.com. The most up-to-date or updated source would be Instagram. You can find that at BackstrapWeaver. And that's where I do most of my like posting, updating, work-in-progress-oriented stuff. And then I'm on Facebook, Neil Goss.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. You know, Neil, you and I'm just going to check out here, and we'll go to Salina and look at your work, and
yeah.
we'll say sign up for
Art Speak
Radio.
They're getting a little collection going, yeah, for
Terrific.
Sure. I love Salina. Yeah.
Well, we love you. Please come back.
Oh, absolutely. We'll do. Thank you, Maria.
You bet, and congratulations on all your work.
Thank you.
You know, we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio right after this. Hey, this is Maria Vasquez Boyd with ArtSpeak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Next up, we have a trio of very talented creative women in the studio. We have Ani Vulcan, Michelle Dreyer, Angie Dreyer, and they're with the, where'd my paper go? Oh, Printly, Kansas City Community Print Shop, which is a creative art space that offers affordable access to printmaking equipment as well as a variety of fun and educational workshops. Printly KC, founded by Annie, Angie, and Michelle, is a community print shop allowing artists and art enthusiasts access to printmaking equipment, which is an open workspace and also offers classes. Printly KC is located at 3121 Gillum Road, right around the corner. You guys are all neighbors. And the website, printlykc.com. So welcome, Ani, Michelle, and Angie.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
So you are new to the neighborhood, but you've been around as Printly KC, right? For a while?
Actually, Printly KC is quite new. We founded it at the beginning of this year. I will say that the lovely ladies that helped me start it, Angie and Michelle, are from Two Tone Press.
That, okay.
And they're veterans
yeah.
of the area. So
yeah.
they were really really great to have them already well established in the community to get this project up and running.
But the three of you all have a history of printmaking, right? In,
yes.
in different aspects. Ani is the director of Printly KC, who's a, I'm going to read this because this is fun, a master trail runner, family history enthusiast. I think I got this off your website. Armenian storyteller, an intaglio printmaker, and loquacious professor with a printmaking MFA.
Yes, I can't take credit for that. That beautiful biography was written by, I believe it was Angie.
Yep. Oh, I got hers. Angie Dreyer, art scrabbler, sci-fi fantasy nerd, world traveler, loud introvert, purveyor of accidental antics, spreadsheet aficionado with a business degree. That's great. They're all looking at each
Angie
other.
So Angie is my sister.
Oh, I'm looking at you, Angie. Yes.
And my name is Michelle, and I started Two Tone Press in 2005, and she was helping me on and off throughout the years, and she actually has a business degree, and then in 2011, she moved up here permanently to help me full-time, and she really is the organizing force, which every artist should have, and helped me get the Two Tone Press's website going, and so she's the one that makes sure all those T's are crossed and I's are dotted.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you have to have that business sense, you know, when you have an organization, a company, and all that. It just can't be just about the work itself, right?
Yes.
She's very shy. Michelle, expert linocutter, letterpress printmaker extraordinaire, marvelous molder of young minds, coffee lover, quiet extrovert, two-tone press owner, Kansas City Art Institute graduate. We love you for that.
Oh, thanks.
So what will people find within the doors in the studio of your company?
Oh, well, we're actually hoping to offer everything.
Yeah.
Everything printmaking related. So any process from letterpress to silk screening, lithography, all types of intaglio. You don't know what that means, then this place is for you
yeah,
because
yeah.
we are definitely
here for people who need to have, like, they have the printmaking background, they need access to equipment, but we're also for this idea that printmaking is for everyone. It shouldn't be, it shouldn't remain in academia where people don't necessarily have access to it unless they have a lot of money or can get a degree. So we want to offer classes that everyone can take.
Or someone leaves the door open for you at on the campus at the Art Institute.
Right, you props know. The door.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. It's true.
So our motto is printmaking for the people. So just being really friendly and open environment that's very inviting to all levels and all walks of life, from, you know, 4-year-olds up to adults. So, yeah, we just wanted it to be kind of wide range. And opening a community print shop has always been something that I have been interested in. And then it wasn't until I met Ani that we were able to start that conversation of how to bring something like this to life. And so she really was sort of the driving force in creating this entity that is more community-based, because Two Tone Press is my commercial shop that I run with my sister. And so we do, like, client-based work, which is very different. And I really wanted to give back to the community and be more involved with the community. So it's been really fun kind of connecting with people in a different way.
So I want to ask you, if someone comes in with an idea but they don't have the experience, where do they begin?
Well, we offer a variety of classes, specifically this fall, that are going to be more kind of like focused on the beginner. So people will take them and then feel comfortable with the process and come back and be able to work on their own. But we do have such a nice, like, open studio environment that there is that, I hope and I imagine will be this crossover of people getting ideas from each other and help and things like that.
Some collaborations. You know, you mentioned events that you have available at your space. One of the upcoming events is a paper marbling workshop, and that comes up Saturday, July 29th at 1 p.m.?
Yes, correct. So paper marbling is a lot of fun, and it's a way to get people involved with creating that's less, like, technique process-oriented, and it's just, I don't know, I like to watch people do it because it seems like they're like, oh, I can do this. If they've never done art before, I can be an artist. I made something beautiful. So, so that'll be coming up this Saturday.
Now, the workshop would include all your necessary supplies, right? Like the ink, the paper?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Angie, let's see, is there an age limit to the paper marbling workshop? Do they have to be at least 18 or older?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And then I see that you also have education discounts for schools and student groups in that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I know that I met you all a couple of years ago, so I'm so glad to have you here on Art Speak Radio to talk about the Print League KC Community Print Shop. What are your hours? What are you looking at for people to come between the hours of?
We're so new, we're not officially open. We have our grand opening on August 26th from 6:30 to 9, and that'll be kind of like our huge kickoff. We did a Kickstarter that we organized in March to help fund getting new equipment, and it went really well, and it really helped reinforce the idea that this is something the community wants, because they were very supportive. I mean, it just blew our minds how much support we got. And so we've been slowly kind of rearranging the studio, making it into the kind of space that is very open and collaborative and has all the equipment that we need. And so it took a few months to do that. And so we're finally, like, we're setting a date. And so August 26th is our grand opening. And then after that, we'll have some limited hours starting off, and then we'll add more as we continue.
Kind of full service, in a sense. So for this opening, then, what will we find in the studio, in the KC League? Print League, KC Community Print Shop. What will we find?
Since Two Tone Press had quite a letterpress collection, we had a lot of extra equipment, so we sort of sequestered some of that the Print League can use. So we had full letterpress facilities through the generosity of a former printmaking professor, Hugh Merrill, he loaned out an etching press for us. So it was a very large equipment that was very crucial to making the studio more complete. And then we'll have silkscreen facilities. And so when people come to the opening, we'll probably have demos and tours of the space.
That's
and
terrific.
Music and food, because you can't have a party without that.
Yeah. You know, as far as the silkscreen that you'll offer there, you know, when I took silkscreen printing back in the day, you also had to burn your screen. Is there a different process, or is it still pretty much the same where you have to burn the image onto a screen?
Yeah, I mean, we're still using that process. So we have a exposure unit, and we have a darkroom area specifically for that. But we're also going to be branching out into more like do-it-yourself kind of screen printing process that you could potentially do at home. Because that's something I like to take around. I actually just came back from Penland with a do-it-yourself kind of screen printing class that I did with kids up there. So, so everything from technical to as simple and basic as you want it to be.
And I think screen printing, you know, when you actually screen the ink across the screen, there's something sort of magical that happens. It's almost like when you're lifting a photograph out of, you know, some of the chemical trays and all of that. I mean, it's like magic. It just kind of appears.
I call that the aha moment.
I get that.
I think that's what the appeal of printmaking is to people, is that they're in all the different processes that we have, because there's sort of the main idea is like a matrix of some sort that you're like applying ink to and pulling it off in different ways, that sort of reveal is just so satisfying and magical that I think that's what draws people to printmaking.
Yeah, and I think there's sort of a renaissance that's happening, that has happened, continues to happen, and the printmaking community. You know, a lot of times we just sort of take for granted, you know, letterpress or silkscreen and that sort of thing. And when people actually have their hands-on experience, it gives them a different sensibility about how things are made or printed and that. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. I love, so I have a background in teaching, so education, college level. I work at the Nelson as well, so, you know, with kids groups and stuff. And I love being able to physically show them how the printmaking processes work, because it is so arbitrary, kind of. I can say all these names, you know, pulling the print and recharging your brayer, and, you know, it's all just words. But when they can physically see that happen, then when you take them into the museum or you show them a print, they're like, wow, because sometimes it does look deceptively simple. And so they do get to have that relationship more with the art, and then they do realize it's a lot more hands-on. Like, you know, if you really like to get your hands dirty or build things, you can do that with printmaking.
Yeah, I like that.
And I like to, whenever I am teaching students, to make that connection between the processes they're doing and how it is a part of their everyday lives. You know, as simple as, you know, silkscreen is very popular, and so, you know, people sometimes don't understand that it's like, that's how T-shirts get made. And so it's, you know, it's very applicable to our everyday lives, and it's all around us. And so I think that they learn to appreciate that more.
I would agree with that. For our listeners, please give us your website and location, any sort of contact information that you can share for folks who are interested in learning more.
Our website is printlykc.com, and you can give us a call also at 816-721-1981.
And you're located at 3121 Gillum Road. And again, the open house, the opening date...
Oh, our grand opening is going to be August 26th. It's a Saturday evening.
Yes, Saturday evening.
6:30 to 9.
Saturday party night.
We know how to throw a party,
exactly.
So it should be a good time.
You know, I have to ask you, too, you know, with this grand opening, do people need to make a reservation? Do they just drop in?
Oh, absolutely not. Our doors are wide open.
Yeah. Just come on in.
Yeah.
Bring friends.
And then we're also have started to put our fall schedule together. And so we've got all brand new workshops listed on our website, from basic printmaking methods that Ani is teaching, which we call Intro to Intaglio, and silkscreen and typesetting and all kinds of things.
We have a Lego date night workshop for couples or friends to come and work together, or and then you use Lego tiles to print on the letterpress equipment.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah,
which people
oh,
yeah. find very appealing because, you know, there's something nostalgic about playing with yeah. Legos. And yeah. so the process is super simple but can be complicated if or complex, create complex image. So any, you know, children all the way up to the adults can do it, which is great.
Hi, that sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, I hope there's wine included with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And beer for those of you that yes. don't drink wine.
I'm just playing with you, but I'll be there. Well, thank you so much. Ani Wolkin, Michelle Dreher, Angie Dreher, I got you turned around. Thank you so much for sharing with us the Printly KC Community Print Shop, the creative art space that offers affordable access to printmaking equipment and fun and educational workshops. Yeah, that sounds great. Website is printlykc.com. And thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today. I know you'll be back, right? All three of you.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Having us.
You bet.
Thank
you. You bet. And you know what? That just concludes this episode of ArtSpeak Radio. Thanks to Neil Goss and the Print League KC, Wascott of Mendina. Next week, we're into August. It's crazy. We've got Chris Dahlquist. He'll be in the studio along with Aaron and Eric Dodson and folks from Arts KC. So, yeah, you'll tune in for that. I know you will. I command you. Thank you for listening. Up next, we have Jazz Afternoon with Jeff Harshbarger. So you'll want to tune in for that. And you know what? I thank you so very much for making us a priority and tuning in today, listening to us online. Thanks so much. Hey, honey, I'm coming home.